your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this segment, I am replaying an interview that we posted on Friday, focused on energy with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. I decided to replay this one because there's a lot of good information in here from Dan regarding stocks he likes and regarding some of the more macro makeup for the energy sector. That, again, is why I'm replaying this, so I hope you all enjoy it. And in case you missed it on Friday, here's another chance to hear what Dan has to say. Hey, everyone. Welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're focused on the energy sectors. We are chatting again with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Now, it's been a while since we had Dan last on the show. Actually, it took me a little while to get Dan locked into a time slot, but I'm glad we did because, look, Dan, really, the energy sector has been the outperformer this year broadly in almost any market. And that even is with this pullback that we've had in crude in the energy sector broadly. But first things first, we keep on hearing about some of these bullish arguments saying that, look, the supply-demand imbalance is still in favor of the bulls, especially when you consider when you look at OPEC and there it seems like unwillingness to increase production, or maybe it is just the fact that they can't increase production that much. The U.S., everyone's waiting for that country to ramp up production. Dan, let's start off simply. Supply and demand, even after this pullback in oil, do you think that, especially when it comes to oil, there is going to continue to be this real supply deficit?
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that OPEC countries could just go out and turn on some valves and increase their production. Well, I want to make it perfectly clear. They are totally tapped out. They keep having these monthly meetings and they raise their official quotas, but they have not produced up to their quota for like 8 months in a row. And I think not for June, but for May, their production was over 2 million barrels a day below their quota. And the reason why is these some of these smaller countries in OPEC, they have not kept up development of their own fields. They were underinvesting in their own fields. And so two-thirds of the countries are really on decline. And now you've got Saudi Arabia, UAE, maybe got a little bit of upside, but not without spending a lot of money. They really, I don't know if you saw it on your media up there when the French prime minister or something cornered Biden and said, hey, look, I met with Saudi Arabia and they've only got like 150,000 barrels a day of additional production, which compares to a world that that needs about 100 million barrels a day of oil-based products. So there's nowhere else to turn. And, you know, I look at some of these reports that come out of the International Energy Agency based in Paris, and they're overestimating what I think the U.S. oil companies are going to be able to bring. We have only in the United States, we have only increased our production about 200,000 barrels a day since last November. Production always kind of does go down in the first quarter because of weather related issues, but we're just very slowly coming back. And they expected U.S. oil production to bounce back to pre-COVID levels like real quickly. And I just don't see it happening. And then you got the pressure from Wall Street to live within cash flow and return dividends to your shareholders. And I think it's smart. That's what they're doing. And, you know, you got a government down here that's like at war with the oil and gas industry. So these companies, they're focusing on paying off their debt. The balance sheets are in great shape. And but from a macro standpoint, this is a very, very tight global oil market today.
Well, Dan, it's also interesting, especially, you know, just focused on where is the growth going to come from. And when they're saying, oh, look at the U.S., they could really ramp up. We were talking off mic before we started recording. The disconnect between what politicians are saying or even what some of the mainstream media saying, like, look at these big greedy oil companies making all this money and charging these high prices. First of all, they're not setting the prices. They benefit from higher prices. But there's a decade or more of underinvestment in oil and gas companies because they were punished by everybody, not just the recent ESG trend, but for a decade, banks have been told, hey, quit lending to them, reduce your exposure. In the markets, the general makeup of the general markets, there's such a smaller percentage that's actually focused on oil and gas and the big funds and ETFs. And then a lot of people, just for moral reasons, they thought they had the high ground. Let's shun these oil and gas companies. And now the prices are high. They want everybody to just flip the switch, like you said, and start drilling baby drill and pump baby pump. And it's not that simple. So maybe speak to that macro part of the company side of things.
Well, for one thing, in the early part of the shale revolution, or whatever you want to call it, you know, 5 years ago, they had to go out and get large blocks of acreage, because these horizontal wells, you know, they have 2 mile long laterals. So you don't need just a 40 acre thing. You need a 1200 acre block of acreage to drill these long laterals. So they were spending a lot of money, overspending maybe on the acreage cost. So all this rumor that the shale companies can't make any money. Well, now most of that acreage is held by production, so they don't have a gun to their head to drill these wells. Because once you establish production on a leased block of acreage, you hold that lease forever as long as you keep producing. So it may have had an original like 3 to 5 year term on that lease, but once you start producing oil and gas, it's held by production, HBP. And so now they don't have, you know, we call it the lease, you know, the land requirements or something to drill more wells just to hold your acreage. So they don't have to. And then they're just under pressure. I mean, they had to pay off a bunch of debt. They don't trust the lenders to be there if they need them. So these companies, and I follow like 30 upstream companies, and their number one priority is paying off debt. And they believe their stock is grossly undervalued. So probably number two is share buyback programs. And then the bigger ones that are already almost debt-free, they're paying very good dividends. So there's a lot of opportunity out here. And I tell you, these companies are not trading as if oil is near $100. They're trading as if oil is like $60.
We'll get into a few more of the stocks, but I do want to ask you about a potential war premium that is still within the oil price, or that also could be playing into this supply deficit, strictly because, look, the war is still ongoing. It seems to have less of a market impact right now, but we do continue to hear about different potential sanctions and the issues that Europe is having getting the necessary oil and energy that they need. How much do you think this ongoing war in Ukraine is still playing into this picture?
Well, it's not as much as it was, because if you look at a price chart, there was a big like $25-$30 jump in the price of oil right when Russia invaded Ukraine. But I will remind you, if you go pull like a 1 year chart of WTI or Brent, WTI was already at $90. It was at $90 before the war started. So maybe there's a $10 premium still in there. But then, you know, all these sanctions immediately come in, but the oil was still flowing for quite a while. And now you got China and India that are still willing to buy the oil. Now, just for logistic reasons, you know, the oil that you were pumping to Europe, that you now have to turn and pump it all the way across, you know, Russia. Russia is putting less oil on the market. You know, they're still talking about more additional sanctions and stuff like that. But I think Putin got the upper hand. He could shut off all oil and gas going to Eastern Europe. And man, that would be devastating to the European economy. I think one of the biggest risks is that we have Europe's economy almost fall off a cliff if they don't have enough energy to make it through the winter. But I did see it today on this situation, is that a big pipeline coming out of Russia to the Black Sea may be forced to shut down for 30 days. I just saw that coming across the wire before we got on this call.
Yeah, it's interesting, kind of the pipeline wars, because we saw the Keystone pipeline killed here. There was that Nord Stream 2 that was very controversial. They were going to shut that down. And so some of it's not just on the producer side of thing. It's how do you get the oil to the different ports and how do you get it out? And I guess another area to cover, Dan, I'd love to get your thoughts on it, is the pinch points. When you see a high price of gasoline or diesel, they're not necessarily the blame is keeps being put on the producing companies. It's a lot of times the refining and processing where the pinch points are. So could you maybe speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, the refiners, the crack spread, the profit they're making on these refined products is pretty darn high. Now, the situation with diesel, and our diesel inventories are like 20% below where they should be, is because we don't have enough heavy oil. The oil coming out of our shale plays is light oil, or even ultra light oil, 40 above 40 gravity. The higher the gravity, the lighter oil. In fact, actually, some of that oil coming out of shale wells is actually clear. You could put it in your car for a while as gasoline, but not for long because it'd be super high octane. But anyway, we needed the Keystone Pipeline because we need heavy oil from Canada. And then also when we were cut off from Venezuelan oil supply, that's also heavy oil that our Gulf Coast refineries were built for. So we have a shortage of heavy oil. And then we were getting some heavy oil from Russia. And we were also importing about 7 or 8% of our diesel, refined product diesel, was coming from Russia. So there is a shortage of diesel fuel. And if we would have a hurricane hit the Gulf Coast refineries and shut some of them down for a while, I got to believe we would have diesel rationing. And, we're not going to be able to solve these supply chain problems without our trucking fleet running at full speed. And, you know, trucks are not Teslas. They run on diesel. And we need that. And also, all the oil field rigs and stuff run on diesel also, all that heavy equipment. So it's a really big deal and probably something that we don't focus on enough. And it's, high diesel prices are what is probably contributing more to inflation than high gasoline prices, because that's what the truckers have to pay. I saw an article the other day, some of these truckers, when they go to fill up their, they have 250 gallon tanks, they may be several $1,000s to fill up a truck when they stop. And those costs have to be passed on to consumers. So it's a really big deal.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of costs passed on to consumers. True, but true. Hey, that is just another example of it. Let's get into some of the stocks, because reading over your material, I really like how you have segregated your stocks into different types of portfolios. We're going to start with one of the more interesting to me, and that is the high yield dividend portfolio. So these are stocks that I believe you isolate that pay right around 10 or greater percent. There's a lot of stocks, it seems like, that are paying some pretty high dividend yields, especially after the fact that their stocks have even gone up pretty well. Take us through how you're viewing the overall health of, first of all, these dividend paying stocks.
Yeah, for one thing, their balance sheets are in outstanding shape. And that's why I put them. So when I pick a company for our high yield income portfolio, it is number one, is their dividend sustainable? That's number one. And number two, I'm looking for companies that I believe are going to be able to raise dividends. And probably 2/3 of the companies in the portfolio, I think we have 13 now. Anyway, 2/3 of them, I believe, will be raising their dividends in the next couple of quarters. The upstream companies I've moved in there, the largest one is Pioneer Natural Resources. And I was on an interview with the CEO of that company, and he said they're raising their dividend and it will be a 15% annualized yield. And Pioneer is virtually debt-free. It's a $30, $40 billion market cap company, super strong balance sheet, lots of running room, and they can maintain their business plan is to have 5% annualized production growth year over year, and they can do that on a modest budget and still generate a lot of free cash flow that can pay dividends, buy back shares. They've already paid down their debt as much as they really need to. So that's probably the safest one on the list. The symbol is PXD. And I've also moved Devon Energy in there. That's DVN, Diamondback Energy, FANG. You can remember, that's an easy one to remember the symbol. If you look at Diamondback Energy, that's a true American success story. 5 or 6 years ago, nobody heard about that company. And now it is one of the best Permian Basin companies. And another one, now this one is more of a natural gas play. It's Coterra Energy. And it was created by the merger of Cimarex into Cabot Oil and Gas. And then right after the merger, they changed the name of the company. But both of those companies have been around for decades, and a very, very solid management team on that one. And based on their last dividend, which was 12.5% dividend yield. And now that the stock's pulled back a little bit, it's probably more like 15%. So all of those four companies should be paying out dividend, have dividend yield over 10% based on their current share. Now, I will tell your listeners, if you go look it up on Yahoo Finance or something, they have a dividend that's called a fixed plus variable dividend. And sometimes you look at the yield and the only thing shown on Yahoo or, you know, E-Trade or whatever may just be the fixed dividend. But those variable dividends are very much locked in because they have such high cash flow.
Well, Dan, it sounds like the strength of the larger companies is there because, A, they're paying down the debt, they're paying these dividends, they're buying back shares. Seems like the health of the industry is maybe as good as it's been in a long time. But what about the smaller companies, maybe the smaller producers or the up-and-coming developers? What's your outlook on those companies and any that stick out to you?
Yeah, and we do have some small companies in the high yield income portfolio that also have probably like 50% upside on them. But we have two other growth companies, and half of these companies also pay a dividend too. But they're more for growth, and that portfolio is trading for probably today about 150% below my current valuation for the portfolio, and I'm only valuing these companies at, you know, 5 to 8 times operating cash flow. And, you know, if you have a profitable company with a strong balance sheet and they have lots of running room, they have lots of low risk, high return drilling inventory, they should be trading for 8 to 10 times operating cash flow. The problem that we still are fighting with is just lack of confidence in the sector. I mean, you have some people still believing we're all going to be driving electric vehicles in the next couple of years and we're not going to need oil and gas. Well, I can tell you, this year in Europe was a rude awakening of how much this world still depends on, you know, hydrocarbon based fuels, and that's not going to change. So, you know, I for these, I'm really looking at growth and some of the smaller companies because they've been able to make some acquisitions and are going to, you know, have some. What I've seen recently is these public companies are able to buy out some of these private drilling companies, because what will happen in these private drilling companies, a lot of them are partnerships, and they'll go out and raise $50 to $100 million. They'll drill a bunch of wells, but they can't keep going back tapping. They can't keep going back asking their partners for more money. So their end game strategy is a lot of times just sell off the whole partnership. And so these partnerships add a bunch of undrilled locations. They have solid production and they're being picked up. One that was just announced a closing yesterday was Silver Bow Resources. And I really like this company. My valuation is like $90 on it. I think it's trading for under 35 now. The symbol is SBOW, and it's got a real balanced production mix. They have a big gas discovery out in the western part of the Eagle Ford, out in Webb County, and it's for the size of this company, it's a really big deal. But they just closed two acquisitions that are going to significantly raise their production this quarter. And it's got real strong cash flow. So Silver Bow, one you can look at. We also have four what I would call gassers that get the majority of their revenue from natural gas. And even though natural gas is pulled, I know it spiked to like 9 and it's now below 6. But if you'd have told these companies at the beginning of the year that they could lock in $5 gas for the next couple of years, they would have just loved you and done it. But, you know, we got gas prices now up. Antero Resources, that's AR, Comstock, CRK. That company is controlled by Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Then the largest natural gas producing company in the United States, in North America, is EQT Corp, and the symbol is EQT. They produce about 5 billion cubic feet of gas per day and a whole bunch of natural gas liquids that are high value. And then Range Resources, RRC. Even big, I mean, EOG has pulled EOG Resources, which is about an $80 billion market cap, super strong balance sheet with tens of thousands of drilling locations and inventory. And it's trading at about a 60% discount to my breakup value for that company. So that's one to take a look at.
So a lot of these names that you shared with us here, I've been searching through the symbols. I follow along with a couple of them. A lot of these stocks have gone up some more than even 10 times in the last about 2 years. Do you think they've gotten a little overheated though, Dan, especially when you consider the macro environment of investors really not being that aggressive with their funds?
Well, so two little Canadians that I love, which were, you know, people thought they weren't going to make it, but they struggled through. They're probably up 500-800% since 2 years ago. And that's Hemisphere Energy. I know you may have had them on your show, and Doug Bartoli's in play oil company. I think from today, if you say oil is going to hold in the $90 to $100 range, I think both of those companies should be triples. They have paid off so much debt. They're in great shape. Hemisphere is definitely going to be debt free, or can be. I don't know if they'll start paying off bigger dividends or something, but they can easily be debt free by the end of this quarter, by the end of September. I think by the end of the year, in play could be totally debt free, but I don't think they will be. They got a very low, very attractive interest rate on a loan that's backed by the Canadian government. And I don't see any reason they should pay that off, but they have got hundreds of high rate of return drilling inventories in some acres that they've been acquiring over the last couple of years. So it's got tremendous upside. One that's a Canadian based company, used to be called Encana, is Ovintiv. And it looks very good to me. And that's it's a large company. It's like 500,000 BOE per day company, and they pay a nice dividend. And it's from where it's trading now, it looks really, really attractive.
Well, Dan, just one other area to touch on in this energy sector would be the oil services companies, whether they're pipeline companies, drilling companies, refining companies, any other maybe in that area that stand out to you.
Well, I don't really cover the oil. I used to cover a lot of the drillers, and I would say that the drilling rates, the rig rates are going up. They have more pricing now. The thing is, when you start talking about these shale wells that go down a mile and a half, 9,000-10,000 feet, and then they go sideways for 2 miles or so, that requires a very large rig with high horsepower, very sophisticated rigs, and those rigs are all working. They're all back working. So there's kind of a shortage rig. You're not going to get any drilling company just going out and, you know, like building new rigs until they have long-term contracts on those rigs. So that's getting tight. So the rig rates are going up. And so I like Helmerich & Payne. Their symbol is HP, Patterson, PTN, and Neighbors, NBR, are all high quality drilling companies. There's some others, but I don't really follow that sector. There's one of our small caps that I really like. And again, this company made it through the pandemic because they were debt free before the pandemic hit. So a lot of their competitors fell by the wayside when completion activity dropped. And it's Solaris Oilfield Infrastructure. Its symbol is SOI, and it is a very unique company that provides equipment and software products to manage frac sand at the drilling location. So what happens is these companies, they'll go to a pad and they may drill 4, 6, 8 wells from a single location. They call it a pad, but it's, you know, the size of a football field, and they drill, you know, 8 wells, let's say, and then they bring in all the completion equipment, and it's a several million dollar project to complete a well. And Solaris's equipment, it stores sand vertically as opposed to horizontally. And if you go to their website, they have videos that shows you how it works, but they have gained a considerable amount of market share. And as drilling activity picks up, and really as well completion activity has picked up, their revenues are just going up quarter after quarter. And they pay a nice little dividend already, about a 42 cents a year. And so if their stock is like $10, yeah, so you're talking about a 4 or 5% dividend yield now. And again, they're debt free. So as their cash flow goes up, I believe they will increase their dividends. And they continued paying dividends all the way through the pandemic. So they're very committed to that. It's one of their business strategies. So that's one I would, a little niche playing company that I would look at. And I think very low risk just because they've got all their equipment's working and I don't see any reason why they're going to stop completing wells anytime soon.
All right, Dan, we'll wrap it up here. You've given us a lot of stocks to look into and still a lot of optimism around this energy sector, especially when you consider if OPEC is unable to raise production or even unwilling, and if the U.S. can't ramp up their production, we could stay in this generally higher oil price environment for a while. And these are companies that actually return money to shareholders in a timely fashion. So attractive on many fronts there. We'll have you back on hopefully next month there, Dan, to continue hearing your thoughts on the energy sector and the stocks that you like. If anybody has any questions for Dan, please feel free to email us at any time. I'll post our email addresses in the posting. And hey, as I mentioned, we'll follow up with Dan. We'll also follow up with some of these companies that Dan has mentioned. Dan, thank you again for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.